Good evening.
Hello.
Tonight I should like to play for you a little melody using 8 ordinary glasses of water. Just to demonstrate how I produce this lovely sound, I fill up this glass so. And strike it with this small hammer so. A little melody using 7 ordinary glasses of water. I fill up the glass so. And strike it so. Thus producing a note very similar to what I get if I ring this small bell. You see? Listen carefully now. There's the glass, and there's the bell. Well, now, melody, using 7 ordinary glasses of water. So let's just run up the 8 notes of the scale produced by filling to different levels these 7 ordinary glasses. Do, re, me, fa, so, la, ti, do. Now a little melody using 3 ordinary glasses of water. 1, 2, and 3. 1 ordinary glass of water. Thank you, Dave. Frightfully sorry, I am so sorry. Really, I'm very sorry.
Once again, the Angus Prune Tune brings to the microphone those jailbirds of the air, Timbrook Taylor, John Cleese, David Hatch, Joe Kendall and Bilotti. And here to give us the word go is the voice of the nation's heartthrob, John Otto Cleese.
It's I'm sorry, I'll read that again. Again. We now take you to the International Trade Exhibition in East Germany. Roll up to the British stand. East German, ladies and gentlemen. Roll up and see the new British aeroplane. It's lovely. You, sir.
Hello, sweetheart.
Good morning, sir.
Good morning, sweetie pie. What are you selling there, Fish and chips,
huh? No. We're selling our new aeroplane, you see. Oh, yes, there it is. It's lovely.
It's not as lovely as you are, baby, really. I saw it. You know that angel face? How would you like to defect, huh? We could give you a pretty good time. How about it, sugar? What about that?
No, I've...
tell you what, sugar, how about you come around to my pad this evening, huh? We'll earn a few dollars, have a good time, blue films, lots of spaghetti, maybe you'd like to defect, huh?
No.
How'd you like to spy for us then, sugar plum, you and your beautiful eyes, go on.
No. How would you like to buy a plane? Yes.
Plane.
A nice aeroplane. Yes, for flying. In the sky.
In the sky.
Forwards, yeah. Like that one up there, yeah?
Yeah, you're quite a salesman, cutie, do you know that?
thank you.
you don't have much trouble with the girls, huh?
No.
Do you see Mitzi over there? She could be yours, you know that.
Really? Look,
you love our country treasure, you know?
No, I don't think I would.
We'd pay you well, you know that.
Would you? Now, look, please buy a plane.
Oh, sorry.
Just as a, matter of interest, you know. Surely, hypothetically, of course. If I did have a friend who was interested in defecting, how much?
£100 a week, sweetie.
£100 a week?
Is your friend interested in cricket?
Oh, yes.
He could be president of the East Berlin MCC, you know?
Could he? and chairman of the test selectors?
Of course, we're trying to get cricket in the Olympic Games.
Are you? And would he be able to bring his wife?
I'm afraid not.
Oh, splendid. £100, Look, please buy a plane. When would you, want to know, if he, could come?
Now.
I'll come. Oh, they're rotten planes anyway. Oh, Mitzi.
Wonderful.
Hello, East Germany. Goodbye, swinging London. Goodbye, English pubs. Goodbye, roast beef and Yorkshire pudding.
Hey, wait a minute.
Goodbye, Manchester United. Hello, East Berlin.
Wait a moment. What else have you got in England?
What?
Ladies Ladies and gentlemen, we present David Hatch in part 17 of our thrilling adventure serial in 2 parts and 6 episodes.
Surely this is usually at the end.
Yes, I know, but they're still writing the end of the show. So meanwhile, here is The Curse of the Flying Wombat.
We left our hero, Tim Brown Windsor, and the mate of the Flying Wombat, Mr. Hatch, in deadly peril on the precarious rope bridge over the Victoria Falls. Suddenly, the bridge begins to collapse.
No, you've got it all wrong.
Oh, have I? Oh, sorry.
They were being held up at gunpoint.
In gunpoint, yes. I think I'm going to get in. They were being held up, weren't they, by that awfully sinister chap, Casey O'Sullivan, and his sidekick. I think it's about his sidekick, Masha Wilkins, on board the Flying Wombat. That's it. What will happen? Is it all over? Will our hero triumph or not? Is that all right?
So, Tim Van Windsor, your time has come. Masher has a gun, and when I give him the word...
You fiend, you wouldn't dare!
Okay, Masher, let him have it.
All right, boss, here you are, mister. Please accept this gun with my compliments.
You great twit.
Mr. Hatch, take these two rogues and give them 50 lashes.
Don't bother, we've bought our own makeup.
With the two villains securely locked up below the decks, life aboard the ship went on as usual.
I'll sing ye a filthy old song of the sea. Way, hey, and scupper the poop. Fill all your tankards and listen to me. Heave away, boys. Sing away, Johnny. And a yo, ho, and off we go.
And off we go.
Going on here? Is everyone happy?
Yeah.
Good. Well, my Tocarines, I don't know where I'd be without you. As a matter of fact, I don't know where I am anyway. So I'm pretty sure we're somewhere off the coast of Scotland. Yes, that's where we are. So we'll put into Aberdeen to pick up some supplies and a few more humorous characters, I dare say.
Captain, please, look up there in the sky.
Good heavens, it's a bird.
It's a plane.
It's a bird.
You're right, it's a messenger pigeon. And what's that tied to its leg?
It's a messenger.
Good afternoon, gentlemen.
Not him again.
It's Grimbling, butler to my aunt, Lady Constance de Coverlet.
I've been travelling like this for 2 days. Phew.
You poor soul, why it's put years on you. Your hair has turned quite white.
Well, if you'd been tied under a pigeon...
That is a very old and rather unpleasant joke.
It was a very old and rather unpleasant pigeon.
Be that as it may.
Yes, it is.
What news, Grimbling?
I've got a message from your aunt, Lady Constance de Coverlet. 2 days aloft was I. Through storm and tempest we flew. The wind blew upon my old grey head. The rain rained upon it. And the snow fell upon it. And the pigeon... Onward, sir. Onward through the storm.
But what of the message, Grimbling?
I dropped it. Not to worry, though. I remember what it was. Your aunt said she'd be joining you at Aberdeen.
Capital.
No, that's Edinburgh.
Grimbling, kindly remember your place.
It's bottom of page 3, sir.
That is not very funny.
Neither was page 2.
Aberdeen on the port bow.
My goodness, that was quick.
And here's her ladyship coming up the gangway.
Hello, Auntie.
Hello, dear boy.
Very well, thank you.
We would like to mention at this point that Mr. Brooke Taylor is playing both Tim Brown Windsor and Tim Brown Windsor's aunt. Auntie. I'm sorry, isn't he? In the theatre, they call this versatility. But in the BBC, we call it economy. Let's hear those lines again.
Hello, Auntie.
Hello, dear boy. How are you?
Very well, thank you.
Welcome aboard, madam, in my usual voice.
Oh, you're too kind, sir. I don't think I've had the pleasure.
Liar.
This is Captain Cleese, Auntie.
Oh, no, I'm sorry, I'll read that again. This is Captain Cleese, auntie.
How do you do, you handsome brute? I am Lady Constance de Coverlet, but you can call me Bedspread. But tell me, Timothy, what are you doing on this ship?
He was forced to come on board the Flying Wombat, Lady Coverlet. Press gangers, they have it in the Navy.
Yes, and don't they have it in the Navy? But who are you, young fellow?
I am Jim Ladd, the cabin boy.
Then why are you wearing a skirt?
It's all right, Auntie. Jim Ladd isn't a boy. He's a girl. It's my fiancée, Fiona Rabbit Vacuum. We were press ganged aboard the Flying Wombat, and now we're on our way to Kathmandu.
I don't get it.
At your age, I'm not surprised.
Suddenly.
What was that?
Look, the mast. Casey O'Sullivan and Masha Wilkins have got free, and they're soaring through the mast.
It's coming down.
Look out!
Too late, we're done for.
No!
Is this the end for our hero? How can they escape?
Will they ever get the green eye of the little yellow god?
Oh, yes, I forgot about that.
Listen again to part 5 of this exciting serial next Monday at 8:30 in the morning.
Why at 8:30 in the morning?
It's a breakfast serial.
We would now like you to imagine a bald little man waddling up to the microphone. We must ask you to imagine it because Bill Oddie is so small he's invisible to the human eye. Take it away, Bill, and don't bother to bring it back.
When some people are morose, they find a little dose of Offenbach will often spark their mood. But even Bartok and Sibelius, for me, are total failures. And Brahms has done more harms than good. So I would like you to know, sir, there is only one composer who ever wrote a note that made me laugh. And there's an impudent refrain that is running round my brain that I often like to whistle in my bath.
There's a little melody, but it's the only one for me. It's a catchy thing they call Beethoven Smith. When you're feeling sad and blue, I will tell you what to do. Grab your old straw hat and sing Beethoven Smith. When life is dire, then you require something that's sweet and hot. Well, have no fear, look who's here, Beethoven. What do you got? You got a kinky kind of tune, the kind of kids all love to croon. So when your sights are on the heights, just take a lift and learn to sing. You love to swing.
Past the minutes of our darkest hours and mingle the darker skins amongst our lighter hues.
Morning, Hugh.
Today, we are going to tell you about 1066 and the man who is named after it.
Well, most of us were named after 1066.
It is on the lips of every schoolboy.
Lipstick.
William the Conqueror.
What do we know of William? Well, firstly, of course, he was a Norman.
I thought you said he was a William.
No, the whole army were Normans.
Were there any Freds or Willies or Garfunkels?
They were all Normans. It made roll call easier.
It also meant William was on first-name terms with his whole army.
Very good for morale.
And very bad for morals.
I knew a girl once who was on first-name terms with a regiment.
That is incredibly boring.
Oh. Anyway, she called it Reggie. Be that as it may, William, Duke of Normandy, had decided to claim the English throne.
I want the English throne.
The coast was clear because a few days earlier, a large army of Scandinavians had landed in Yorkshire.
Au pair girls.
And Harold went straight to meet them.
I don't blame him.
No, to fight them.
I still don't blame him.
William's army. What an army it was. He had some splendid knights.
And then they left Paris. And caught the cross-channel ferry.
With him were a band of stalwart men who were William's aides.
Yes, and one of them had a great big silver ring in his ear.
Why?
He was William's earring aide.
Well, be that as it may, as the Norman army advanced towards Hastings, they looked a splendid sight.
The Normans are wearing absolutely fabulous snappy chukka boots with tiny pointed helmets which go perfectly with their tiny pointed heads. Duke William has on a big, powerful, if you'll pardon the expression, a breastplate with a matching saucer, a tiny lawn girdle, and the whole ensemble is rounded off splendidly, dramatically, with his old Etonian tie. Thank you, William.
They were short of time. William appealed to his army.
It was all that kinky gear.
Men of Normandy, are you with me, heart and soul?
Yes, we are, Duke.
How many more times must I tell you? D-U-K-E spells Duke.
Meanwhile, Harold's army had marched all day for the past 6 months and was rapidly descending from the north.
Events were beginning to take shape, but there was still one vital person who had yet to play a part.
Me. Couldn't I have a passionate love scene with Harold where he sweeps me off in his hairy arms and his breath mingles with mine and he holds me
look,
close.
Harold, well, I don't know how to put this really. He didn't really like, ladies.
You don't mean...
Good heavens.
I say.
Well, I tell you one thing for sure, I'm not playing him.
Oh, come on, Tim.
No, I'm always getting the la-di-da parts and I'm fed up with it. Fed up with it.
She could be one of the seamstresses.
That's right. She can be patching the royal bedspread and in comes William.
Musing on the morrow.
Oh, I say, who are you? Seamstress patching the owl in my royal bedspread.
I am a seamstress patching the owl in your royal bedspread.
I'd never have guessed. My word, you're a comely wench.
First comely, first served, sir.
But what are you doing in the royal chamber? Get out at once and put it back under the royal bed.
I have come to interview you for the tapestry, sire.
Well, get weaving. But first... I crave a favor.
Anything, my lord and master.
See if there's a man under my bed, will you?
Not you too.
You don't understand, my life is in peril. What if there turned out to be a man underneath that frock?
I should be so lucky.
Sorry, but I must ask you to remove all your clothes. Just a routine inspection.
This is where we'd better have a musical fade out. Dave, a suitable piece of seductive smoothery, please.
He's fired.
He's drunk, you mean?
These musicians...
I know.
Maybe we'd better set the next scene.
Yeah, all right, the scene. Harold's cap.
Yes, we know that.
As the army slumbered soundly in the warmth of their wiki-ups...
Slumber.
Wiki-up.
There were those who never slept, but plotted throughout the night.
Plot.
Eagle has been delayed till the sunken claws of the ferret are crushed. No, that giant panda of the purple pagodas is perpetually paying to look at milk.
Yes, please.
The roosters are upstairs.
I know. I can hear the rats flying.
I think we understand each other.
Yes, my
you're both daft. Shh. Look. There's Harold. Harold with a stip. Look, there's Harold. Harold. Look, there's Harold. Harold with a stiff upper lisp. Surely you mean lisp. Try it again. Try once more time. Harold with a stiff upper lisp. Surely you mean lip. Wait till you hear it.
Where's my man? Oh, someone call him. Henry! Oh, where's my Batman?
Out with Robin, sire.
Oh, pother. I've got a battle tomorrow. I haven't got a thing to wear. Mm. Now, listen, my Lord Chamberlain.
Yes, madam.
Well, one of us is wrong. Look, we haven't got any plans for the morrow.
Then we'd better make some.
By midday, plans were afoot. And by evening, they were 18 inches. Oh. So the battle started. Remember, Harold's team are in the darker shirts and are fighting from right to left. So let's go over straight away to our radio map for the present state of the battle.
Hello, I'm your radio map. I'm here to tell you what's going on. Imagine an apple. The English army are represented by the little stalk in the hollow at the top, and they spread out and down the hill thus formed. At the core of the apple lie the forces of William. Now, Harold's plan is to draw William forward, thus... and to cut him off halfway up on the right-hand side of the apple. And then when William has 3 yeses to him, to attack. And then to have gone.
Meanwhile, the battlefield rings with opposing orders.
Take right, withdraw, swing left,
and across,
and periscope.
The battle raged all day and on into the evening with overtime. Towards sunset, as a desperate ploy, William shouted his last orders.
Last orders, gentlemen, please.
This devilish trick lured the English down the hill and into the pub. There they were surrounded, and Harold received his fatal wound.
Mud in your eye, Harold.
Harold's eyes narrowed, but not enough.
Oh! Oh, I'm slain. Slain. Oh, I'm done for. Murdered. Yeah, that is Harold. Oh. Was I all right?
It was all over. William had proved himself a worthy victor.
I thought he was Norman.
No, he was Victor.
And why was he called William?
To settle the argument. William had conquered England.
Anyway, there it is, and if you'll excuse me, I've got a train to catch.
And so the Angus Prune Tune brings to an end another edition of I'm Sorry, I'll Read That Again, which was written this week by Graham Garden, John Cleese, Tim Rook Taylor, Eric Idle, and Bill Oddie, who also wrote the songs. Additional materials by Andy Smith and Don Currell. The music was provided by Dave Lee, and the voices you heard were those of Tim Rook Taylor, John Cleese, David Hatch, Joe Kendall, and Bill Oddie. The production was by Humphrey Barclay, the most swinging man in the studio. We shall be cutting him down after the show. Tune to Prune at the same time again next week to hear John Otto Cleese say...
It's I'm Sorry, I'll Read That Again. Again.